Hello, OTG fans, and welcome to another finals edition of the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. Make sure you follow OTG on Twitter at OTGBasketball. Also hit that subscribe button. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me today, Corey Waldron. What's up, Corey?
Not much, Nick. Thanks for having me on another edition of the Outlet. Happy to talk some finals.
If you guys didn't know, Corey and I have been doing halftime shows throughout the finals. He's back on here. We're here to talk Game 3, recap last night. Warriors won 118-113. Cavs fall, the 0-3 hole, initial reactions after the game.
Cavs and seven, right? They're going to be the first they're gonna be the first team ever to come back from down 0-3. You know, if that was to ever happen, LeBron would get statued at like every arena possible because there would be no debate on who's the greatest player. But, yeah, last night the Warriors pretty much solidified that this is going to be a sweep and they're going to finish a perfect 16-0.
Yeah, I think a lot of question marks this year going to the postseason. People were like, oh, the Warriors haven't been tested or they haven't been tested throughout the postseason. Last night they were down in the fourth quarter. They came back. They finished the game on an 11-0 run. And you kind of just saw that talent, and having the players like Steph Curry and Kevin Durant at your disposal just makes you an impossible team to defend. And not only offensively, but defensively, they have great players. Klay Thompson did a great job on Kyrie. So tough for the Cavs, but it's nice to see, you know, history in the terms of the Warriors.
You know, to everyone who kept saying, you know, Klay's expendable, Klay's role, like they can trade away Klay and just pull up somebody else. There's no need to, because at the end of the day, this is why you have Klay. He played superb defense on Kyrie for three games to this point. Even though Kyrie got a little loose and got a little hot late last night, he still has been doing a great job physically on Kyrie. And offensively, we've seen Klay Thompson just come alive. You know, he shot 38% the first three rounds. And last night, he shot 61%. And, you know, on a night where Curry struggled shooting, you have Klay shooting and you have Durant being Durant. And that's just doom for any team who plays against this squad.
And I think you made a great point with his defense. In this series, Draymond Green has seen a lot of time on the sideline due to foul trouble. And having Klay out there defensively to deal with Kyrie has definitely been a huge help. Obviously, KD has stepped up defensively too. But the impact Klay has been huge. And like you said, I think we talked about it on halftime before and we talked on the preview shows. You know, if Klay got hot in this series, the Cavs really had no chance. And that's kind of what's going to happen.
And can you imagine if Draymond wasn't in foul trouble? I mean, even last night, in just 32 minutes and five fouls, he had 8, 8, and 7. And I know he hasn't been shooting well. I think he had at least one air ball last night. But the fact of the matter is, he still led the Warriors in assists. And when a guy's not even playing, like if Draymond could stay on the court, these games wouldn't even be close.
That's a great point. And it's not only like, you know, like you mentioned, his playmaking, his assisting ability on the offensive end. Defensively, we know what type of player he is. He can guard LeBron. He can guard Kevin Love. You know, he's going to help you rebound. And he's just going to bring that extra toughness. And he hasn't even played a ton. So the Warriors are going, obviously, you know, you're never going to see a team go 100% all the time. You know, just there's always somebody who's going to do bad. But just imagine if he was able to stay on the floor.
It's scary. It's extremely scary. It just shows how versatile these Warriors are, the fact that, you know, you don't have Draymond for the full length of the game and you still win by five when you're down trailing on the road in the fourth quarter. It's just – this Warriors team, you know, last year we made questions. You know, we questioned if they're clutch, you know, because they failed to close out 3-1. And, you know, that was one of the question marks going into this series. Are the Warriors clutch enough? And, I mean, last night with the dagger three from Durant, they really solidified that they can finish games.
Yeah, no, it definitely showed up. And KD specifically, a lot of people, you know, talked a lot of shit about him all year, calling him a cupcake, saying he's soft for going to Golden State. And he's been nothing but huge in the NBA Finals. And, I mean, this is the biggest stage against the best player in the world in LeBron James, you know, kind of like his friendly nemesis. And, you know, obviously we know KD wants that number one spot, and he's definitely climbing higher after the performance we've seen in the Finals.
I'm going to say, though, Durant is still soft. He still left the team that was up 3-1 to join a team that beat him in 173 games. So he still is soft. But at the end of the day, he is still a top three basketball player in this league. Arguably second, arguably first, depending on where you see LeBron after this finals. But Durant is for sure a top three player.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, I have him at number two just because of what I've seen him do. I loved his potential that he's shown defensively and as a passer just in the series and throughout the postseason on Golden State. And they've kind of unlocked him almost. So, I mean, going forward, we know LeBron's eventually going to get caught up by age at some point. So it'll be Kevin Durant's title to take. Obviously, there's guys like Kawhi Leonard out there are going to try to go for it too. But it's definitely nice to see him have success after the criticism that he's faced all year.
I want to say one more thing about Durant. You know, all regular season, he really didn't have these kind of offensive explosions. Like, he had a lot of just 20-point games. You know, there wasn't anything special. And we've seen him through three games of the finals, like, he's dropping 30 with just ease against the best player on the planet.
Exactly. And that's why I think I mentioned it to Xavier on the last recap we did is, you know, the ease that he's having scoring on LeBron James is just something we're not used to seeing. Even sometimes LeBron is engaged and he can't do anything against Durant just because of his athletic and physical ability.
And we're talking also, like, I think in 2011 finals, you know, KD averaged 30 points per game against prime LeBron James. And now we're at, you know, 32-year-old LeBron and he's averaging right around like 34 or 33. So
yeah,
there's definitely a switching of the guard coming.
Exactly. And I mean, you could argue he could have bigger numbers if the Warriors actually needed to, but they have other guys like Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. I think I want to talk a little bit about Steph. You know, I think a lot of, you know, storyline, headline, people are always trying to have a hot take that Steph Curry can only shoot. I think in this finals run, he's definitely showed off a lot more of his ability, you know, as a passer, as a dribbler, and as a rebounder. He's averaging close to a triple-double, and I think that's pretty impressive for somebody his size.
Yeah, you know, the fact of the matter is, too, he had a triple-double in game two, right? And he had 13 rebounds last night. And he led the team in rebounds. And I think he had a tied the game high with 13 rebounds. You know, we're talking about a point guard here who's just rebounding at absurd amounts, which is very impressive for a guy who, like you said, people say can only shoot.
Yeah. And I think that's one thing I love about, you know, you always see this with great players. Every year they're going to add a little bit to his game. Obviously, he didn't necessarily add rebounding to his game this year, but just in other terms, like his handling, his finishing ability. And I think it's going to, He's kind of shut down those people that said, you know, Curry doesn't show up in the finals, because I thought this year, other than the turnovers, he's been great.
I mean, even last night, I'm just looking at the stats right now. He had 5 offensive rebounds. How the hell does Steph Curry get 5 offensive rebounds in a game?
Yeah, especially when you have players like Tristan Thompson, Kevin Love, and LeBron James on the other side. You know, he's willing to stick his nose in there and grab a few.
It's incredible, and it's on a night where he only shot 42% or whatever, and that's scary when, you know, Curry isn't even at his best and they're still putting up these numbers.
Moving on to the Cavs side a little bit, you know, Tristan Thompson, we're going to bring him up again. We brought him up a lot in the show. He just has not performed. 23 minutes, 0 points, 3 rebounds. It's tough to win when you have a player performing like that.
I mean, I don't even know what you do with Thompson at this point. I mean, the fact of the matter is, even, I mean, at least last year, you know, there's a lot of times where they were putting switches and Thompson was guarding, you know, Curry, and he wasn't doing an awful job on the switches. But this year, you know, you can't leave him on the floor for more than 5-minute stretches because he's not rebounding. He's losing positional battles to Pachulio and McGee, and he's not even aggressive offensively. He only took one shot last night.
Yeah.
You know, this is a guy that LeBron demanded the Cavs give a max deal to keep him. And this is not good money spent when this is what your starting center is giving you in the finals.
Exactly. And it's, you know, he's not out there rebounding and playing great defense offensively. He's so limited other than the alley-oop, which the Warriors do a great job of shutting down, that there's almost like no point in him being out there. You know, you're better off having a three-point shooter out there that can spread the floor and give LeBron some more room in the paint. I think the Cavs are probably at their best when they play LeBron at center.
Oh, my God. That lineup last night where he was at center was really cool to watch. Like, I've never seen that, but, I agree. The pace was a lot better, and they just had a lot of shooters on the floor. With LeBron, it just opened up the game a lot more.
And you don't really have to worry about anybody on the Warriors killing you in the post. I mean, the only thing you lose is a rim protector, but it's not like there's a ton of elite rim protectors on the Cavs. So LeBron out there, I think him at center, and even if you play Love at 4 or if you go with all small guys, it makes more sense, especially because they've said it multiple times that they're not going to slow down the pace. So if they want to try to compete with the Warriors, they need to put more offensive firepower out there.
Yeah, and like you said too, you know, Draymond Green a lot of time, especially with that death lineup they run, he plays their center. And LeBron matches up fairly well with Draymond. And like we said earlier, Draymond's been in foul trouble a lot, so having Draymond have to guard LeBron for – you know, 5-minute stretches with that small ball lineup, that can only benefit the Cavs.
Exactly. But in terms of just the Cavs supporting cast, going to the series, I know some people favor the Cavs bench, some people favor the Warriors, but the Warriors bench has just pretty much killed them. You know, they've come in and they played great defense and they've gotten some offensive, you know, points as well. Cavs, on the other hand, it's like one guy shows up per night. Korver showed up last night. You know, Jefferson showed up a little bit. But other than that, you know, we haven't seen anything from their bench. Shumpert plays good defense, but he takes a ton of terrible shots.
Yeah, Shumpert, you have to, like, you have to live or die with Shumpert because he gives you good defense, so you want him on the floor. But offensively, you might as well put out somebody who's blind because he's just useless. I mean, luckily for them, J.R. Smith finally had a decent game. He finally showed them a little bit. He hit, what was he, 5 for 10 from three last night,
yep,
which obviously they can use. But, you know, still, J.R. Smith still has those J.R. Smith shots he takes. There's a couple of times he took, like, a turnaround fadeaway three. And, you know, in the finals, when you're playing the best team, you can't give them those kind of poor offensive sets where you're giving them the ball right back. You got to be smarter. And that's the kind of part where, like, J.R. really hurts them.
Exactly. And especially, he's just been so inconsistent this series. And defensively, he's got lost a few times. You know, he puts a good effort in defensively, but it's tough. The Cavs at that two-guard position, every player kind of has their own issue. You know, you look at Shumpert, we mentioned his offense is bad. You look at JR, he's very inconsistent. You look at Korver, you know, he's kind of hot or cold. He's going to make his threes or he's not going to make his threes. And defensively, he's going to be in good position, but athletically, he's just not there.
I mean, Korver, if he hits two, I think he missed two corner threes in the fourth quarter, one of them extremely late in the game. You know, if he just hits one of those corner threes that we see Korver hit all the time, we're talking about a possibly different outcome this morning or today. And, you know, it's frustrating for the Cavs when, you know, you have all these three-point shooters and nobody can get it done consistently.
Yeah, and talking about three-point shooting, Kyrie and Love combined 1 of 14 from 3 last night. 0 of 7 from Kyrie and 1 of 7 for Love. Obviously, some of those were contested looks, but they should at least be shooting a better number than that.
I mean, yeah, and you look, Shumpert was 0 for 2, Jefferson was 0 for 2, Darren Williams in his horrible 4 minutes was 0 for 1. It's bad when LeBron James, besides J.R. Smith, is your best three-point shooter for the night. Like, that's not good when you rely on LeBron shooting those threes. And we saw late in the second half when LeBron was kind of chucking those threes. You know,
yeah,
that's not his game.
You can tell the fatigue definitely catches up with LeBron in the second half because he comes out like a man on a mission the first quarter every game this series. Yeah, I think he's probably had double digits in every game and he's gotten to the free throw line a lot. But as the game progresses, his numbers just dip and dip. I know, I think I saw ESPN posted a graphic, you know, in the fourth quarter in the series total, he has 11 points. Some of that is because of blowouts, but some of that is because he's just gassed by the time it comes to the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and you know, people are very critical of LeBron being passive in that fourth quarter. But the fact of the matter is, they're not even in that game in the fourth quarter if LeBron isn't using every single piece of energy he has throughout that game. And he wasn't even making bad decisions in the fourth quarter. He was making the right pass. You know, a couple of times he drove and dished out the Korver in the corner. You know, guys just aren't hitting shots. And when LeBron keeps you in the game for three quarters, he just needs a supporting cast member to give him a little bit more, to put them over top.
Exactly. And these same passes LeBron was making in the previous rounds, the players are hitting the shots. I think it's just somewhat of the role guys and the bench guys not stepping up. We always know LeBron's going to come to play. It's just the other guys around him. Like, well, I don't know what people really want from him. What is he going to – he would have to drop 50, like 10 and 10 to win the game. And, like, he still might have lost. That's just how good the Warriors are.
Yeah, and, you know, it's unfortunate because also, you know, a lot of the bench players on the Cavs, they're not young. I mean, Korver's 37, Richard Jefferson's up there in age, Darren Williams up there in age. And the fact of the matter is, too, like, these guys on the court, they also get matched up with the Warriors who simply are younger for the most part. And by the time, you know, the closeouts are faster. Like, Korver, I don't think I saw him take a wide-open three, though. Even that three he took in the corner, I can't remember who was guarding, but he was right in his face the minute he caught the ball. And that's just the athleticism of the Warriors, too.
Yeah, I think one thing that's been super apparent for me is the defensibility of both teams. It seems like the Warriors almost never give up a wide-open shot, or they're always closing out. Or if they're going to give up wide-open shots to a guy like Amon Shumpert or somebody, they don't care if they shoot. On the other hand, you see the Cavs are giving up a ton of wide-open shots. And like you mentioned, I think that has to do with their athletic ability. They're just not that fast, where the Warriors are a lot younger and a lot faster, and it's kind of really hurting the Cavs.
Yeah, I mean, even last night, too, I'm looking at, you know, even though McAdoo and Barnes only played 6 seconds, every single player on the Warriors touched the court. I mean, when Steve Kerr has the confidence that he can play almost any guy he wants in a finals game, it just shows you how much that affects it. Because, you know, Cleveland, again, we didn't see Channing Frye. We didn't see – I know we haven't seen any Derek Williams for the playoffs for the most part. But, like, I liked how these guys were implemented in the regular season. Like, Derek Williams gave them a little bit more than I ever thought he was going to get when they signed him. Channing Frye was effective from deep. And they really just turned away from a lot of the guys who were key for the season.
And I think that's a big difference in the series, too, is the Warriors are, you know, they're fully gassed up and ready to go in the fourth quarter. You know, Curry didn't even play 40 minutes last night. He played 39 minutes. Durant played 41. Klay played 41. Where you have LeBron, who is older than all these guys, playing 46 minutes and having to do more than all these guys combined almost. And, you know, obviously it's going to take its toll. And I think the Warriors do a great job. And Steve Kerr, you know, I got to give him a lot of credit because at times, you know, a lot of coaches would go back to their stars when they start to lose their lead a little bit. But he sticks with the bench guys sometimes and he just, you know, eats it out. And he's just going to stick to his guns and put Curry and KD back in when he feels like it and when they get proper rest. And that's a big difference.
Yeah, I kind of don't give Steve Kerr the amount of credit he deserves because I do feel like whoever coaches this team is going to have success. I mean, we've seen it with Luke Walton, Alvin Gentry, and even Mike Brown. With this team, the coaching does, you know, only a certain degree, like a certain amount of help. But especially in this series, though, you see Kerr, like, with the rotations, when the sub guys out, when to keep them in. He does a great job of keeping this Warriors team rested and just, you know, on pace to like, hold off a LeBron run and keep them poised.
Yeah, he has a good feel for when to call a timeout. And I think that's a really good trait for a coach because when the other team's about to go on a run and you don't call a timeout, if you don't calm them down, it can get out of hand real quick. But moving on from there, obviously there's been a ton of hype about LeBron James. And obviously if the Cavs lose this series, the Cavs get swept. There's been talk about him leaving Cleveland this offseason. We'll touch on this a little bit. We'll talk about it more in the offseason. Do you think there's a real possibility that he leaves his team?
Hell no. Can you imagine what would happen to Cleveland if LeBron left? Like, I understand. Like, I've thought about it, the scenario. Like, he did what he wanted to do. He won a title with Cleveland. So, technically, he owes them nothing. He got them what he's always wanted to give them, which is a title, the first time in 50 years. But the fact of the matter is, heading to L.A. to play for the Lakers, to me, makes absolutely zero sense. Because that team is not going to be in contention of winning anything for another 3 to 4 years. Even if they get LeBron, yes, they're going to be a playoff team, but you're still not competing with the Warriors at the end of the day. And if you go to the Clippers, okay, you have injury-plagued Blake Griffin and injury-plagued and older Chris Paul. So either way, neither one of these teams are better on paper than Cleveland. For Cleveland, your best bet is just to retool your bench to get some younger guys in. You know, get rid of Darren Williams, maybe get rid of Korver and bring in some younger three-point shooters. I don't see why he'd head west. I really don't.
There's been talk maybe about him going to the Clippers and reuniting the banana boat.
Oh, you know, God.
Obviously, you know, Chris Paul, Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, and then maybe Carmelo in some type of sign and trade with New York with Blake Griffin. That's been a rumor thing. I mean, I think that would probably be the only way I really imagine him leaving is where he sees a situation where he can play with those guys. Obviously, he's mentioned it in the past that he's wanted to play with all of them at least for a year or two. I don't know if that's going to happen. I kind of agree with you. I don't really see him leaving Cleveland. It just doesn't make much sense, and it's not really a good look. I mean, obviously, like you said, he brought them the championship, but I don't know. I like LeBron and Cleveland. It just feels good. It just makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, and yeah, I guess if he didn't care about winning, which I can't see LeBron also not caring about winning, especially with the way he takes care of his body, the specific days that he rests, you know, for games, which are all very well thought out. It's not like he just says, I'm not playing today. They're all thought out rest days. Just to think that he would want to give up winning to play with a 36-year-old Dwayne Wade, a 34-year-old Carmelo Anthony, and a 32 or 33-year-old Chris Paul, I find it hard to believe that he'd want to just do that.
Yeah, I think he's all about winning, and I think he's only going to go to a situation that would be his best bet to win. Do you see any scenario where the Cavs move maybe a bigger piece? They move somebody like Kevin Love or Tristan Thompson and maybe a bigger trade, trying to get some different talent in there?
I mean, according to Chris Broussard, he believes the Cavs have the best chance to trade for Paul George. I don't know if you heard that. Yeah, he said trade Kevin Love for Paul George. You know,
No.
tell Paul. He pretty much said, you know, everyone tamper. So LeBron, call Paul George and say, we need you to beat the Warriors. Come to Cleveland, and then, you know, have Paul George pretty much press, you know, the patient say, you can lose me for nothing or trade me to Indiana. I don't know how realistic this all is, but I
Yeah.
mean, if they get Paul George though, it makes it interesting. But at the end of the day, I don't know how much trading away Kevin Love for Paul George really helps you.
I don't even think that. I mean, I don't think in any way. If you think about it from the Pacers' perspective, if they're going to trade Paul George, they're most likely not going to want Kevin Love. They're going to want a younger asset so they can like build around Miles Turner probably, or you know, just go young. Because obviously, I don't think Kevin Love is like a franchise-changing player. Like you want to build your team around him, especially at the age he's at, and just like his defensive ability, I think hurts him a little bit. And adding Paul George, I think would be great, but it's still like you know, you have Kyrie Irving, LeBron James, and Paul George. Like LeBron and George can probably play off the ball a good amount, but Kyrie just needs to have the ball in his hands a lot. I don't know if that would be someone they'd consider to move. I doubt it, but I could probably see the Thompson. Maybe if they move Thompson, like a whole bunch of these like role guys, but I don't know if any of them played well enough that they have value.
Yeah, and I think, you know, at least from the Pacers perspective, you're gonna want draft picks. You know,
Yeah, and they have none.
you're not gonna want, you know, Kevin Love or especially Tristan Thompson or any of these older guys. I wouldn't be surprised though if the Cavs are at least in rumors to, you know, if Dwayne Wade opts out, which I don't think he will do since leaving $23 million on the table at the age of 35 just feels hard to believe. But
Unless LeBron wants to give it to him for free.
that's, you know, another little tampering under the table deal, yeah. But you know, I maybe Wade comes in, and I wouldn't be shocked if the Cavs tried to trade for Melo. Yeah, at the end of the day, Melo is probably going to be given away for almost nothing because of that no trade clause. So
Exactly.
arguably, you could trade him away for Kyle Korver and Darren Williams, and you know, something stupid, or maybe you get rid of Tristan Thompson's deal for Melo. You know, but either way, that doesn't solve your problem because Melo is still a defensive liability. And another year older with the bad knee and the bad shoulder, it doesn't really help you against this Warriors team.
Yeah, I could see the Melo thing, like you said, the no trade clause, and just the way Phil Jackson has kind of ruined that situation. Melo's value is at an all-time low, thanks to the Knicks themselves. I mean, I think if he did come to Cleveland, though, it would kind of give him a kickstart. Obviously, in New York, he hasn't had much to play for the last few seasons, playing with LeBron James, a close friend and the best player in the world. Maybe we'd see Melo kind of get back. I don't know if you recall, like a year or two ago, he kind of got really slim. And he wanted to play lighter, but he ended up putting the weight back on. I think if he went light and kind of went to the Cavs, he kind of played a little bit of that at that four position, depending on if they move Love or Thompson. It could be an interesting matchup. He'd just have to be a lot better defensively, though, against the Warriors.
Yeah, I mean, offensively, they could do, you know, we saw that small ball lineup with LeBron at the five. They could do some crazy small ball lineup with LeBron, Love, Melo, Kyrie, and JR. And offensively, that would be really fun to watch.
Exactly. And then they even wanted to get more interesting depending on what bench pieces they change up. They could even do something like LeBron, Melo, bench piece, and Kyrie Irving. So
Yeah.
that would be a really difficult lineup to stop. But enough about the hypotheticals. We'll move on to game four and talk, I guess, more hypotheticals and a prediction. So who do you have in game four? Is this going to be a Warriors sweep and why?
You know, like my heart just really says there's no goddamn way LeBron gets swept in the NBA Finals. But, you know, looking on paper, LeBron in game four is going to have to play another 45 to 46 minutes. You're going to need Kyrie to drop 35 plus again. You're going to need someone besides, because I doubt J.R. Smith has another solid game from deep. I just don't see it the way he's been shooting. And you need someone else to step up. I don't see this Cavs team, especially with how they lost game three after being up in the fourth and not, you know, going on the 0-11 drought for the last 3 minutes to not score and lose. I think this is a game for the Warriors to lose. You know, it's not a game for Cleveland to win. It's a game for the Warriors to lose. So I'm going to say the sweep happens and the Warriors finish this off in four.
Yeah, I'm going with you right there. I think the Warriors go 16-0. Like you said, after last night's game, having the lead and having the feeling that you were going to win, I thought at one point they were going to win. Then the Warriors just come out, hit a ton of clutch shots, especially KD just kind of ripped their hearts out. And it kind of deflated the whole Cavs team, and you could even feel the environment. I think somebody said, not really a huge fan of First Take, but I saw someone tweet about it, that the environment in Cleveland after last night's game was not the same as the day before. So I think, you know, even the fans feel like, shit, we're not going to come back from 3-0. We came back from 3-1 last year. We got mad lucky. That shit doesn't happen every year. They have Kevin Durant. See you later. Let's get better for next season.
Well, yeah, and the fact of the matter is, too, in the NBA Finals last year, Cleveland was the first team in Finals history to ever come back from 3-1. Well, no one in the history of the NBA playoffs have ever came back from an 0-3 deficit. There's been teams that have forced a Game 7. I think there's three teams that forced a Game 7. But no one has ever completed, you know, this kind of comeback. And there's not much hope, if you're Cleveland, for this to be extended past tomorrow. Or, tomorrow.
Exactly. And, you know, what's worst case, what best case scenario, you win one game. I think the Warriors would handle business in game five and kind of destroy them. But moving on from there, this hasn't been the finals that we've expected. If it happens to be the last game, game four, who is your finals MVP?
It's got to be Kevin Durant. I mean, even though you can make a strong case for Curry, just because, you know, he had a triple-double in game two, he had a double-double last night. He still hit six or seven threes last night with 26 points. He's been very active defensively. Like, he had that one steal on LeBron.
Yeah, that was LeBron a nice steal.
Oh, my God, what timing. Because if he messes up that steal, he gets dunked on by LeBron.
And so demolished, too, at the same time.
He saved his – like, he literally put his life in harm's way for a steal, and it worked out. But, man, oh, man, I was watching a poster, and he saved himself. But, yeah, it's got to be Durant. I mean, fact of the matter is he's going against LeBron James. He scored 30-plus points in every game. He's giving them rim protection. You know, I always – we're defensively, when I think about Kevin Durant, I think about game two when he had Kevin Love in the post.
Yeah.
Love turned around. He just took the ball. Like God, that was so cold-blooded.
Yeah, he took the ball, and then he went down the other end and hit a tough shot over Kevin Love.
So yeah, it's just demoralizing. It's got to be Kevin Durant. He's been insane.
Yeah, Kevin Durant for me is definitely the guy. I think, you know, obviously all these superstars and all the all-star appearances we have and these guys combined, Kevin Durant's clearly been the best player. He's even been better than LeBron. He's just made everything look so easy. The only way I see Steph Curry coming away with it is if, you know, Durant has like a rough game four and Curry drops like 40 plus on like ridiculous numbers. But I think it's Durant's to lose.
Yeah, I agree. Even though these, you know, this series obviously hasn't been that close, it has been fun though seeing all of these superstars in action, because to a degree, I know I've seen a couple tweets, it's to a degree like an all-star game.
Yeah.
You know, we're seeing six all-stars. Kevin Love can technically be seven if you want to count them. Seven all-stars in a game, which is just, you don't get that in the NBA finals often, at least we haven't in years. So it's fun to watch.
Not to mention all the former all-stars on the team too. You got Andre Iguodala, Darren Williams, Kyle Korver, David West, you know, a ton of guys on these teams that are just great. So it's definitely been cool to watch. And, you know, even though it's going to most likely be a sweep, I think I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I would say, it wasn't as good as last year, but I think these finals have been better than 2015 personally. You know, even though the Cavs are on the wrong end of it, every game's been close to the third quarter. And even last night, you know, it was close till the fourth.
And if you can find some enjoyment in the greatness of the Warriors, I think you find like another degree to watch just because it's like, holy shit, these guys are that good.
For sure. I agree.
But that wraps it up for today. Thank you everybody for listening, and enjoy game four. Maybe we'll be here for a game five. I don't know, but thank you, Corey, and talk to you soon.
Later, Nick, everybody else. Adios.